From Norcross, Georgia, it's Hearts of Fire, the podcast for the team at BioBridge Global, where we're working every day to save and enhance lives through the healing power of human cells and tissue. I'm this week's host, David King, and we're continuing our visit with Dr. Norman Kalman, who is CEO of the organization for 27 years. In this episode, we're talking about the growth of the organization beginning with his arrival into the 1990s and more.
How did the idea of having a separate subsidiary, of having Qualtex Laboratories, how did that idea come about?
Well, we were aware of the fact that if we just collected blood, and the cost of testing blood was going up, because although we did most of the basic testing, screening of blood, having to buy reagents from profits like the Abbott Labs, and they raised their prices quite a bit on us. So we thought, okay, we need to do more of our own testing and testing for other centers to generate more revenue for the center. In the 1980s, we were basically break even in terms of our financial statements. And it was only when we started doing testing for other centers that we actually started making a profit. And although we always said, although we're not for profit, we're not for loss.
Yes.
So we had to make sure the bottom line was in the green, in the black, not in the red. And I noticed when I worked for the Red Cross, they were often, as their name implies, in the red, because they didn't diversify to the extent that we did. That's how it grew. Another factor that really helped us was that we grew with that center to become ISO 9000 certified. And that was the reason that we actually got into that. We were helped by Abbott Diagnostics, who sent some of their staff to help us train for the ISO certification. And when it became known that we were certified as an ISO 9000 center, that helped us pick up more testing.
And just what's the significance of being ISO certified?
Well, ISO certification is an international certification of quality, and it showed that we were more than just a local blood center setting our own standards for quality. I mean, we were inspected by AABB and AATB and other organizations that were coming in. But having the ISO certification showed that we were really serious about being nationally qualified to do testing.
And it was a laborious process, wasn't it? It took quite a while to get that certification.
Yeah, that took several years before we got the certification. And at about that time, I was elected to the board of the International Society of Blood Transfusion, which personally for me was cherry on the cake. It was really great to be recognized in that way. I got to be the vice president of the International Society of Blood Transfusion, serving from about 2006 for 4 years in that role. And actually, I'm disappointed that I retired at that point, because I was hoping to become president. But it was great because I got to travel all over the world on their back. They, as a member of the board, they took me to all the meetings which were held in various parts of the world, and I got to see how blood banking and testing services were conducted in Europe, in China, in Japan, and various other parts of the world where I went to meetings for the International Society.
That must have been eye-opening. You know, you come back with ideas, right? You come back with, well, they're doing it this way, and it seems to work.
ideas and customers.
And customers.
Yes. And, you know, it really gave the, well, as it was called in the South Texas Blood and Tissue Center, international exposure, because I made sure that people knew where I was coming from when I came to those meetings. So, also had a very good program, Distinguished Speaker Series, which helped us to invite speakers from all over the United States and Canada, as well as some from overseas, to give talks at our center. And that was a nice bonus for the people who worked at the center to actually hear well-known blood bankers and hematologists come and talk. It was basically a monthly program, and talk about blood banking in their areas of the world, as well as new innovations that were coming into the field.
I want to backtrack just a little bit, because I want to talk a little bit about the various places we've been located through the years. Now, when you arrived in 1983, they were getting ready to move into the downtown building, the YWCA building. And what was your impression when you got there and they were sort of the boxes everywhere and they're moving into this building?
Yeah, well, the move down to McCullough and Broadway, after I arrived center, and the building that had been bought was the old YWCA building. I was a little bit disappointed to see that it hadn't been selected, because it really was a dormitory and even was supposed to have been haunted. There were rumors that they... And so we had to kind of work around what was available. It was also a historically significant building, so you couldn't make too many adjustments to the building, especially to the outside, but also some of the interior parts of it. And it was very apparent within a few years that we'd outgrown that building, especially as we were looking to expand. We had a very innovative board, which was chaired by Cliff Jeffries, and he worked closely with me and the rest of the board and the staff to move us to the current location where we are, and to design a building which was more in keeping with a testing lab, a blood services collection center, and so that move occurred in 1994, and I think that's really when the center took off. It was more in a consolidation mode in the 80s.
In the 1980s, you're still sort of establishing yourself. And in 1994, when you get into the proper facility, yes, in sort of a central location, it seemed to, like you said, it really consolidated things. Things really took off.
Yeah, well, memorable moments from that time were we got involved with the National Marrow Donor Program. Admiral Zumwalt came to the center to welcome us into the fold, so to speak. And then I got to meet with Governor George Bush, as he was at the time, in Austin. So this also gave us some recognition, you know, meeting with people like that, having photographs taken together with Admiral Zumwalt and Governor Bush. And then when we started the Texas Cord Blood Bank, which was funded for the whole of Texas, I got to meet with Governor Rick Perry, and he actually came down to San Antonio to present us with a $1 million check to get the program going. So, you know, all issues like that demonstrated the fact that if we were going to grow, we had to move from the downtown location to our current facility. It also helped us with the local hospitals, which showed that we were independent. We weren't linked to just the downtown hospitals, but the the ones up on the hill as well. Also, the fact that we were right on the IH-10 gave us great access for our roadmobiles to go out to park all the vehicles that were now accumulating.
When the decision was made to move there, there literally was very little in that the sort of corner of IH-10 Advanced Jackson Road. There wasn't much there at all, was there?
Right. Well, that's how we were able to accumulate so much property in that area. We were fortunate at that time it hadn't been developed, and we have now sufficient land, I hope, to last another 10 years. Certainly it got us from 1994 to here without running out of space. And then we're adding the testing lab in Norcross in near Atlanta. It was a big bonus for the testing lab because it put us on a different power grid as well. It was always a concern of what happens if the electrical grid in Texas would break down. You know, what would happen to your testing services? So that's why we were looking for a different power grid for a large lab. And the facility out in Norcross certainly fits the bill.
And this facility, where we're sitting right now,
yes.
This facility, it's big enough to have accommodated a lot of expansion through the years, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm amazed to see what's happened since the time that I left here. The lab has expanded even more, and it provides a lot of space to diversify and expand the testing services.
So, about the time, well, the time that the whole organization moved out to I-10, the decision was made to change the name of the organization too, and it, you know, it's obvious from talking to you that there's a reason for that name change, because you had to diversify.
Yeah, well, the initial move into that building was what drove the name change, because now we had testing services for, we had tissue services rather, at that point, and so the tissue services had to be incorporated into the name. As new services were added, and BioBridge Global came about to indicate not only were we a national service, but an international service.
And that was the impetus to sort of give the implication that we were an international organization.
Correct.
You know, BioBridge, it became, or it was designed to be sort of the parent organization, right? Is that that was the idea?
It was the umbrella for the entire organization. It's more than a blood bank. And, you know, tissue services were important but small aspect of what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we wanted to show that there were other services as well. Also, under the umbrella is our foundation, which was very important in terms of fundraising, initially for the Texas Cord Blood Bank, expanded to provide financial support for other things that we do. We got the community more involved as well by having a foundation. There were regular meetings at the center of the foundation board, and we would show them what we were doing in terms of cord blood banking and then other services as well. And so not only were they donating funds to the program, but they would recruit others to donate towards the center. And that was really important to get especially the cord blood bank off the ground. Also to help fund other blood services and testing services that we were providing. Yeah, another way that we attracted other people into the center was to start the art collection, which was actually the brainchild of Bill Stone, who was our chair at the time, together with my wife. I must give her some credit. My wife is an artist, and she was very interested in that. But there were several other artists locally who worked as a committee to purchase art from local artists. The emphasis was totally on buying from San Antonio and regional artists to display in our center. And then we would have tourists coming through to look at the artwork, and that also raised the awareness of the center in our community.
And that was, it was quite a project. The dedication of 1% of the construction money was almost unprecedented at that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it took a little bit of a sell, even to our board, to say, okay, we're going to take 1% to do that. But it's more than paid off. First of all, we wanted to make the center itself welcoming. We wanted to make sure that donors who came in there, and patients as well who have been treated there, feel more relaxed, that it didn't appear just as a bare clinical building that they were walking into. So we chose a lot of bright pieces and cheery pieces to make anyone who came into the center feel welcome. The fact that we were supporting local artists also helped, because they appreciated that, and we got a lot of good publicity out of that.
So what's your favorite piece in that art collection?
That is a tough question. I mean, thinking about it, I mean, that's very difficult for me to choose one particular piece that, out of all the pieces that we have. But, you know, there's some that are amusing, like Ken Little's Hurt and Heal, his 2 feet that he has in our entrance hall. I like Rain, which is the... It's like a mobile as you came into the original building in the center. The one on the cover of the art collection brochure, which is actually supposed to be a heart, was supposed to typify what we do, you know, blood coming from the heart. I like that piece as well. But when you ask me which is my favorite piece, Americans, I love them all.
a good answer there.
Executive producers of the Hearts of Fire podcast are Adrian Mendoza and Jay Pajinski. Our director is Angelica Sandoval, with technical assistance from Matthew Flores. The Hearts of Fire logo was designed by Roberto Esquivel. If you'd like to be on the Hearts of Fire podcast, if you have an idea, a suggestion, if you'd like to get rid of this East Texas twang once and for all and be the host of Hearts of Fire, email us, heartsoffire@biobridgeglobal.org. Thanks for listening.